Now, let's begin with the major issues on the implementation of the agreement. Funding. Now, parties to the agreement are asking for funding to implement the agreement. What's your government's response to this appeal?
Well, the first thing to say is to reiterate the UK's support for peace in South Sudan and for the peace agreement, which we hope will bring that peace. The UK also, of course, it's important to say, is already funding the peace agreement and the peace process through its continuing support for and funding of bodies such as JMEC, now known as the reconstituted JMEC, and CTSAM. And, of course, the UK is the second largest donor after the US to South Sudan, is supporting the people of South Sudan in a large number of ways, including through humanitarian assistance and development assistance, support to education and health. And I was just in yesterday speaking to the first vice president about our contribution to the health sector here. So the UK is already doing a lot. We are also responding to some of the requests in the peace agreement specifically made to the Troika in the UK. For example, we're funding expertise for the Transitional Boundary Commission under the peace agreement. We are aware, we know that there are other requests for funding, which probably will appear once the NPTC, the Coordinating Committee, puts its budgets together. I think what we would want to see is what the government of South Sudan, which has the main responsibility for bringing peace to its people and has been talking a lot about its increased revenues from oil and non-oil resources and sources, which is welcome. We want to see what commitments they are putting in. And then I think with the rest of the international community, and it's not just about the UK, we will look to see what we can do in, I would say, sort of targeted and specific ways supporting the peace. But I know there have been also some commitments and promises from other countries, actually non-traditional donors, to also look at some aspects of this. So it will be a joint effort, but the part that the government has to play is very important. And in terms of the government, we and others have also made clear that we want to see, as part of this peace process, and indeed underpinning this peace process and the peace agreement, real signs of real commitment from all the parties, including the government, to its implementation. So there's been a lot of progress with reduction of violence, and that is very welcome. But there are still ongoing pockets of very serious violence, and we've been hearing about this particularly in the Equatorias and actually quite near to Juba. The incident in Gorum a week or so ago is very serious. It is being investigated by CTSAM and those sorts of things, incidents which are still going on, and are not just skirmishes, as some of the senior members of all sides like to say. They are not just skirmishes, people are dying, and that is not acceptable 4 months after the signature of the peace agreement and over a year since the signature of the Comprehensive Cessation of Hostilities Agreement, to which all parties which bind all parties. So we want to see progress on some of those really fundamental things.
Yes, and this is what you have said after the signing of the peace agreement, and many of the international community said the same. They need to see progress first. They need to see commitment from the warring parties before they really come in with the fund, which is the money cash to help in the implementation of this agreement. So far, with all the progress that has been made, is that not enough to prove that the warring parties have really shown that commitment so far, and there's been some progress, and now the international community can come in to fund things to do, well, let's say, containment areas, for example? Is it not enough? Do they need more to prove that, you know, they're committed to this agreement?
So, as I said, you're right to point, there has been progress. I mentioned before there's been a significant reduction in the level of conflict and national level conflict and violence, I should say. We're disturbed to see the level of intercommunal violence and the deaths from intercommunal violence on the rise recently, and that is concerning. But the national level violence and conflict, the level of that has gone down. As I said, though, there have been some quite serious pockets of outbreaks of violence with people dying and being injured, civilians, that calls into question the commitment of those parties involved. And it is, I'm afraid to say that all parties, in one way or another, have been responsible for breaching the ceasefire agreement and the peace agreement. So there are other areas where we would like to see more progress on release of political detainees, on the permission for and allowing civil society to do its really important, fulfill its really important role on freedom of the press and media, and there have been some worrying signs on that. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that there hasn't been progress. You mentioned the meetings that there have been in South Sudan under the peace agreement. That is very important. We had the peace celebrations at the end of October last year. Initially, the meetings of the various bodies under the peace agreement were tending to take place in Addis Ababa or Khartoum. We and others were putting pressure on the parties to come to Juba to have those meetings. I think that's a really important sign to the people of South Sudan that the parties are willing to get together in a room in their own country and talk. Mm-hmm. That is happening, and that is really positive. So there are some positive things happening. I would say that on some of the key issues, our understanding is, and we've been following the meetings and the discussions as closely as we can, there is still some progress to be made on some key areas, mm-hmm. like the discussion of the boundaries and states issue and the security sector provisions in the peace agreement, particularly, and there's a lot of talk about cantonment, but the really difficult issue about what an integrated military looks like and how the parties are going to agree on that, there is still some way to go. So progress, yes, but some areas of concern. And then going back to the funding, which was the question behind yours, I go back to the fact that the UK is already supporting the peace process. As I said, we have given some technical assistance, which costs money, to one of those very knotty issues that I picked out, which is on the boundaries issue. And we will look to see whether we can provide assistance as the process goes along, but we are not talking about the funding of cantonment, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. I think there have been other offers to help with that from other countries, and as I say, the government itself, and I have spoken to many ministers about this, and some of them will say that they look to do some of the funding themselves. We look forward to seeing those
great
details.
Great. Now, the UK Secretary of State for Defence, Gavin Williamson, recently visited South Sudan. Can you tell us more about the visit?
Yes, this was the most senior UK ministerial visit we've had for a couple of years. We've had a lot of ministers here, issues of South Sudan and the peace process, and indeed the conflict, have been very high on the agenda of the ministers in the UK. But this was the most senior visit we'd had for a couple of years. So I think that was significant. It comes at a significant time. He was here for quite a short time. He had a good meeting, and quite a long meeting, with His Excellency President Kiir, Salva Kiir, who was accompanied by some of his ministers, including the Minister of Defence. And the Secretary of State for Defence again reiterated the UK's support for South Sudan, for the people of South Sudan, our desire and our wish to see peace here, and the UK's commitment to continue to stand with the people of South Sudan and work very hard for that peace. So he discussed with President Kiir how the implementation of the peace agreement was going, and the UK's commitment to work with the government in the goal of bringing peace and stability. He was also here to see the troops which the UK has as part of our commitment to supporting the UN here in South Sudan. So we currently have around 300 UK troops based in mainly in Malakal and Bentiu, with UNMISS. So we, and I went with him, we went up to Malakal and Bentiu. So not in addition to seeing the troops, we were also able to see some of the work that the UN does, and specifically some of the work that DFID, so the UK, does in the POCs, particularly in Malakal, where we had a visit to the POC, and specifically an area which supports women, many of whom, of course, by definition, have been displaced from their homes, but also many of whom had suffered violence, including sexual and gender-based violence.
Yes, and this visit was followed by the UK representative for Sudan and South Sudan, Chris Trott. He met with the National Pre-Transitional Committee. Can you share some details and outcome of that particular meeting?
Yes, thank you. So I was with Chris Trott as well. Again, Chris is a regular visitor here, and he was also going, after his visit to South Sudan, he was going to the to other countries in the region. So it's another aspect of the UK's very intense engagement on supporting peace in South Sudan. So we met the chair of the NPTC. He also had meetings with ministers and members of the opposition here in Juba. And I'll just note that was, I think, the first time that he and I had been able to meet senior members of the opposition in Juba. And again, that's part of the progress that's been made under the peace agreement. In terms of the meeting with Chairman Tut, we discussed the progress that there has been made in implementing the peace agreement. As we've been discussing the progress of the various committees that are now meeting in Juba, we welcomed that. We asked about some of the detail of the progress that they'd been making, and the chairman was talking about the reporting that he was getting back from the committees. And we encouraged the chairman to be as transparent in the work of the NPTC as possible, and we were pleased that the chairman agreed to do that. So to be transparent and to inform the international community what was going on, of course that's important. It's also important that the NPTC is transparent to the people of South Sudan. So I heard some very good intentions and commitments on that from the chairman. So I hope that is followed through.
Great. Let's talk briefly about humanitarian work in the country. Now, 2018 was a very important year for the humanitarian family, where humanitarian focus shifted more to reconstruction and resilience. Does the UK government have any plans to support humanitarian programs in 2019?
Very much so, because as I mentioned before, the UK is the second largest donor in South Sudan. So we have a very significant program which is mainly focused on humanitarian because of the significant need. So our program is around $200 million a year. The budgets have yet to be finally settled for next financial year, but I would expect it to be around the same. Our financial year runs from April to April. I would expect it to be around the same. Because the humanitarian needs, we anticipate, will continue to be huge. We also, as part of that $200 million, give significant assistance in the areas of health and education. So we have the Girls Education South Sudan program and the Health Pool Fund, where we manage a fund which is also funded by other donors, the US, Canada and Sweden. And as I mentioned before, I was talking to the first vice president yesterday about the success of the Health Pool Fund, which just last year helped to run 800 healthcare facilities throughout in South Sudan, and they provided and helped to provide 6.5 million appointments for South Sudanese people, including 2.5 million children under five. And that's just in 1 year, so that's significant. That assistance will continue. Many government ministers talk to me and have talked to our visitors about doing more on road construction and other areas of work. What I always say to them is that our first priority is to help the people in most need in South Sudan, and that's on the humanitarian. Mm-hmm. All the figures, and we keep in close touch and do our own assessments on the needs, and all the figures and assessments are that humanitarian need will continue, certainly over the next year. We very much hope that if the peace agreement brings the sustainable peace that we hope it will, that people will be able to come back to their homes, will be able to take up their lives and livelihoods again, will be able to plant food, plant crops to provide food and livelihoods, and that the humanitarian need will go down. But we do not see that happening in the immediate future. So we will continue to provide the humanitarian assistance.
Yes, let's talk on the gender side of things. You did mention when you went to Malakal, you saw a group of women as well that your government is helping, and unfortunately some of them have gone through violence, including gender violence or sexual violence. Now, unfortunately, stories of rape have sneaked early into this year. We heard of cases of women and 12-year-old girl raped in Lobonok. Now, with this kind of cases, what concrete action could you advise to curb this vice, and most importantly, to protect the women and girls of South Sudan?
So I will say that, and you mentioned some of the stories, I think you said, sneaking in, and some of them, unfortunately, have been some of the stories and the reports of rape and sexual and gender-based violence have come early in the new year, but this is not a, sadly, very sadly, this is not a new phenomenon. Just on a personal note, as an ambassador here, as a woman as well, because inevitably that is part of your emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. I have been, in my time here in South Sudan, I've been absolutely appalled and shocked by the levels of sexual and gender-based violence that that are in South Sudan. And this is across, it's part of the national level conflict. Sadly, it's also seems to be part of the intercommunal conflict and violence which goes on. There are we are not the only ones who are deeply concerned about this, and there have been reports by the UN and by various other bodies, NGOs and so on, which document this. This is the responsibility of all of the parties to conflict, whether that's at intercommunal level or at the national level. And this is something we have made clear to all, that sexual and gender-based violence as part of conflict, as a weapon of war, if you like, is completely and utterly unacceptable. We want those who are responsible for this violence to be held to account, for there to be proper investigations, for the perpetrators to be brought to justice, for the women who survive these terrible attacks to be supported, to be have their stories taken seriously, to be supported and given support afterwards. I think stigma after sexual violence is a big problem here, and the UK has done some work on that. So we, with others, are doing a lot of work on this. Directly, I mentioned the women-friendly space, for example, in the POC in Malakal, which the Defence Secretary visited the other week. It is a big part of the programmes that we have in the POCs and outside, to protect and support women, women's empowerment through the Girls Education South Sudan program is also very important, because although sexual and gender-based violence can take place and women can be subjected to that, even if they are empowered and educated, the fact that women are in more vulnerable positions sometimes because they are collecting firewood or going for water on along insecure roads or in insecure areas puts them at greater risk. So those are some of the interventions that, and support that the UK is giving. But really, this is the responsibility of the authorities in South Sudan, and I mean the government, but I also mean the senior members of all the parties to the conflict in South Sudan, and they should be in no doubt that the UK and other members of the international community will be looking to them to hold their people to account, to stop this violence, and to make sure that anybody who commits it do face the consequences.
Ambassador, it's always good talking to you. Any final remarks or message out there that you'd like to send to our listeners?
Just to reiterate the UK's support for this peace process. I think sometimes it is characterized as the UK is not supporting the peace agreement, not supporting the peace process. That is absolutely not true. I hope what I've said today shows that the UK is fully engaged, will continue to be fully engaged, and really supports peace in South Sudan, which is what the people of this country really need and deserve.
Ambassador, thank you so much for coming to Miragre. I do appreciate your time.